Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Sorry, you concede a lot from set pieces and we never score them. So yeah, probably.
Yes, well, yeah. We're a perfect symmetry of a 0-0, aren't we? I think that's what it's looking like.
The Fantasy Football Show.
Hello, everybody. My name's James. Welcome to another Planet FPL Clash of the Correspondents. Let me first introduce you to our Night in the Forest correspondent, Mark Southerns. How are you, Mark?
I'm all right. How you doing? Difficult period for my club, but looking forward to getting back to the normality of football.
As we will cover shortly. And our Crystal Palace correspondent, Rory McLaughlin-Dowd's in. How are you, mate?
I'm good, James. How's your arse?
How's my arse? Why?
Yeah, your sciatica.
Oh, my bum's all right. My back's okay. It's my leg that's the main problem. My arse was a bit of a problem with 10 minutes to go against your team, but we fixed that. We'll come back on to that. Mark, we must start with this points deduction, which I think means I've just looked and worked out that since you beat Manchester United, which I want to say was December, you're 1 point better off from then, now. Wow.
Shocking, isn't it?
It's only about 5 points from nine, plus the, obviously, the, I say plus, minus the four that's come off. What's the reaction to the minus four from the Premier League?
I think generally it's been expected. We thought it could be six. So I think generally the support, the fan base have been like, well, okay, we'll take it, move on. Let's get cracking. We're 1 point behind Luton. We've just played them. We've seen what they've got. They've got lots of injury concerns still. They haven't got the squad depth. They've got a tough run of fixtures. We've got a good run of fixtures over the next four, where we can get in ourselves in a position where we can get back above them and maybe some points clear. So I think the general gist from the fan base was, okay, so be it. Perhaps we even got off lightly. Let's get on with it now and focus. But then, of course, that's been perhaps put into some doubt by the fact we appealed at the last knock-ins.
The club believes that the appeal is a free hit and it can't get worse. Do we think that's correct?
I bloody hope so. If it gets worse, we're down, basically. 4 points is probably just about at the level we can maybe get ourselves out of it. If it had been six, I wouldn't fancy our chances. It all depends on the next four games, what we get out of these three home games we've got coming up, because we've got to get 7 points out of those three home games. We've got Burnley and Sheffield United in the last three away from home, and they probably will be relegated by then. Maybe unless Burnley can build on their victory last time out. But I would have thought there's every chance that Sheffield United and Burnley will be down by the time we go to them in 36 and 38. So you could look at them two games and think, well, we should get results in those two as well. But, you know, end of the season, they're playing for pride. Maybe Burnley are playing for a little bit more than that. Maybe that's a 6-pointer final day. So I think these next three home games in the next four are absolutely crucial, starting with the Palace game.
Your 4 points clear of Burnley, who can probably smell an opportunity because they know that Everton are probably in for more points deductions as well. So you're on 21, Burnley 17, Luton 22, Everton 25, Brentford 26. Not safe. Rory, you're on 29R. Do we agree with that?
Not really, no. It doesn't feel like it. I mean, it's got kind of shades of last season to it where we were sort of slipping back into it. Towards the end, and then Roy came in and gave us a sort of shot in the arm and got us over a little bit. So some of the performances under Glasner have been quite good. But I was looking at the stats, actually, and it doesn't seem to have improved that much. It certainly feels like a lot more of an improvement than the sort of stats are showing. But yeah, certainly looking at the fixture list, it can be quite difficult. I think the next two are very important for us, and hopefully Bournemouth think they're safe. But having these two being away from home back to back is a little bit of a disadvantage with the quick turnaround for midweek fixture.
Yeah, your run-in's bad, really, from here. You're right to mention the next two, Forest away and Bournemouth away, definitely capable of getting points. City and Liverpool in consecutive games before your 34 double, more on that later. Looks tough. And then Fulham, United, Wolves, Villa as the last four, with Fulham and Wolves being away, and they've both been pretty strong at home this season.
Yeah, they have, but I'm sort of looking at those and thinking if you play them in February or January, it's a lot more difficult than in May because I think Fulham, I mean, I think this international break is kind of a line to some extent where we start looking at some of the team's motivation where, you know, a few of them probably that don't go on international duty probably take a bit of a holiday and go to the beach and then don't come back. So hopefully that happens to a few Fulham players and a few Wolves players. Wolves will still think they have a chance of Europe though, probably.
Well, Fulham's form, they do as well.
But yeah, hopefully those two, by the time we play them, think that they're safe.
And Mark, for yourself, what's really interesting about, you've obviously mentioned these three home games you've got in the next four, Palace, Fulham, Wolves with Tottenham away in 32. In the same three game weeks, Luton play Tottenham away, Arsenal away and Manchester City away. Yeah. I mean, you can wrap this up really, can't you? And kind of kill it here, as long as you get the results.
Yeah, I think the utopia would be 9 points in the home games. Like, that'd be incredible. Now, under Cooper, we would look at those three home games and think, yeah, that's potentially possible because we had a very strong United front at the City Ground under Cooper. We had that little bit of extra that the fans bought for the City Ground. I'm not saying that's completely gone under Nuno, but the bond isn't there with Nuno like it was under Cooper. There's no question of that. Still think the City Ground atmosphere and perhaps off the back of the penalty, the 4 points, the atmosphere will be even stronger, that feeling of, you know, let's fight to get ourselves out of this. It's there, it's in our hands, right? If we get 7 points in those three home games and then going into Sheffield United and Burnley in the last three, where we should get at least one victory out of those two, I would have said, then Luton have got it all on, right? And you know, like I say, the injuries they've got. I mean, I feel for them. I think, you know, we played them last week and I thought they were poor, but really, their 11 they had out is a shadow of their best 11, whereas we're getting back to our best 11, if anything. So I was quite harsh on how they performed, but given the injuries, it's not surprising that they're now scratching around to get results. And I hope, obviously, from a Forest perspective, that continues, but I think they will end the season with injuries clearing up and Everton at home, Fulham at home for them. They'll look at those two games and think they can get 6 points out of them. So it's very, very tight. We've got to make the most of these three home games.
And after that, you go to Everton in 35 as well.
Yeah. It's a small matter. Yeah.
Squeaky bum time, very much so, mate. I wish you well. Rory, fill us in on Oliver Glasner for those who, to be honest, I'm going to guess probably the majority of people probably haven't seen Oliver Glasner's Crystal Palace yet. What's different? What's changed?
Yeah, he's changed the shape, obviously, with the going to five at the back, which I do think suits us, especially with the players out. Historically, we would have been based quite a lot on wing play with Zaha in particular and Bolasie over the years and Townsend and so on. But changing to five at the back, I think, does suit the players we have, especially Munoz, who they brought in. To be fair, it's quite difficult to know what he's going to do when he has everyone fit, because he's gone to this formation, but the team picks itself at the moment because we have so many injuries. Those are basically the only 11 players he could pick or you'd want to start. Arguably, maybe Edouard could come in, but that's probably the team that's there. So, yeah, it's quite vertical. I remember watching the Monday Night Football against Everton was actually before Glasner had officially taken over, and they were talking about sort of Red Bull principles, which is where he started off. Now, Red Bull obviously play that kind of very narrow shape and press very high and play a 4-2-2-2 and try and win the ball back high up and play very intensely. And I think, I can't remember his name, the American coach of Leeds.
Jesse Marsh was on Monday Night Football that night.
Yeah, and he was talking a lot about the phrase verticality and trying to just move the ball forward quite quickly. And we've been a lot more direct than we were under Roy, which does suit our players. And it suits in particular, I think, the way Mateta's developed as a forward over this season. So there's not much creativity from central midfield. Most of the creativity comes from the two players behind the striker and then the off-the-ball runs from the wing-backs. And obviously Anderson's responsible for quite a bit of ball progression as well. Wharton is an incredible footballer and he can move the ball forward quite well as well. But at the moment, because of the injuries, it is still the case, as we said, basically on the first pod of the season, if you stop Eze, you do go a long way to stopping us, basically.
Do you think... I know Elise's nearly fit. He's not going to be back for the Forest game. We're hoping sort of 33-ish, maybe just in time for the double, maybe. Can this system work with Eze and Elise?
Well, it can do. It can work with if those are the two behind a central striker, but then you've got to make a choice between AU and Mateta and Edouard. Now, he's chosen Mateta over Edouard, but AU is one of our most experienced players and consistent performers, and he gives a lot to the team in terms of holding the ball in the final third, doesn't lose it very often, wins free kicks, gets you down the pitch, etc. So he could go to the back four then. That would probably mean Joel Ward dropping out. I think without Mark Gehi in the team, I think a back five definitely suits Chris Richards a bit more because he's quite good when he gets dragged into wide areas, but he's not. I don't trust him so much as a central centre-back in a back four.
Okay, so you think a switch to a back four could happen? Because I think most people are assuming this is going to stick now. This is Palace's 3-4-2-1, this is what it is.
Yeah, I think Glasner, basically, he did play a five at the back. I think it was at Wolfsburg. And the players turned around to him and said, look, this isn't working. We need to go to a back four. And he was pragmatic then. So yeah. I don't know if that was mostly player power saying, this isn't working, we want to change. And he was pragmatic about it. But he would have played in fours, as I said. You know, I think it was at Salzburg, not Leipzig. But he would have played back four there, probably. He was the assistant coach, I think, but he will know how to play both systems, basically, and he could be more pragmatic about it just to get the best players in the team. I mean, I don't think you can drop Mateta on form in terms of how he's developed backing into players, holding the ball up well, running the channels, and I don't think you can drop AU. So at least Enes, they should both start, and then I don't think it does work in that system.
Do you know what the last game Mateta didn't start was?
No, I don't. I'd imagine it was before Christmas, though.
Was when he came on and scored the penalty against Liverpool. Game week 16. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, and that was after he'd won the penalty against Man City that got us a point as well. So
Liverpool was just before City.
Oh, right, okay. So he did it the following week as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's been very good. It's the same thing that I was saying before. The amount of times that the ball just dribbles across the goal mouth and there's no one there to put it in and you're just like,
we had
a strike. Exactly, yeah.
So go on then, first fantasy chat. Mark, Chris Wood versus Mateta. For those looking for the enabling forward, don't say Rodrigo Muniz and be boring. Come on, let's discuss it out. Or Antoine Semenya. I'm not letting you have that either.
Well, Palace have got that double, haven't they, coming up, whereas we don't have...
yeah, but that's useless. The people are free hitting in 34, Mark.
Yeah, I mean, Wood's going to keep playing because Awoniyi's not match fit yet. And I think he's got at least two or three more starts in him before Awoniyi becomes a factor again, I would say. And even when Awoniyi is fit, Wood's doing well enough to stay in the team. Not on pens, though. Mateta is, right? Or do you think Mateta will hold them? Eze will take them, right?
Yeah, if he's on the pitch, he'll take it.
I have been impressed with Mateta. I think that when you look at data, the data of the last six suggests that our attack is stronger. And Chris Wood is the focal point. And he's, you know, when he started, I think his goal ratio to starts is really strong. So I probably would favour Wood without any bias playing in that, really, just because I think that we've got three must-win games in the next four. We've got to score goals. The onus is on us. The incentive to win those games is really strong. Whereas I know Rory says Palace aren't safe, but I do question you know, going into Saturday, which team's going to have the greatest desire? I'd like to think it's Forest because we've got more to fight for. Whereas I think Palace, if I was in their team, Menti would feel that they're safe, but maybe the fixture list says otherwise. So I think I would just give Wood the edge. Yeah.
I think, Rory, about 4 points would be enough for you, mate, from what's left, I think. I think about 33 would be enough, considering what you're on 21, are you, Mark?
Yeah, 21. I mean, 34 seems like completely out of sight, so yes.
Well, yeah. And it is for Luton as well. When you look at them away games Luton have got left, you'd think that sort of total is going to be beyond them as well. If you drag more off of Everton as well, and I know Everton do have a really good running for the rest of the season, largely. But yeah, I wouldn't even be surprised if you're safe already, Rory. I don't think that's beyond possibility.
Yeah, that's exactly what I wanted to go into Saturday thinking.
if your points total starts with a 2, Mark, no one's taking anything for granted just yet, mate.
No, I suppose.
Yeah. We also have a sort of part of Palace lore where we were 9 points clear with 3 games to go. And we went down on goal difference. And they actually did a lap of honour.
92-93 season?
Yeah, I think it was.
With Oldham. Oldham had games in hand, didn't they, I think?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so they did a lap of honour and then they had 3 away games for some reason. They got rearranged and then they lost 3 games and went down on goal difference. So, yeah. You're not safe till you're safe, definitely. Although I doubt many of the players know that, to be fair.
Most of them probably weren't even born, to be fair, mate. Was the answer to this conundrum, though, Mark, of Wood versus Mateta, was it Origi? Was that the correct answer? Is he first choice now?
Don't behave. No, I mean, I think Wood's shown that he's the better finisher. Origi's, unfortunately, the chances have fallen to Origi in the last few games and he's not taken them. I'd like to think Awoniyi or Wood would have taken those chances. Origi's done better. I mean, I think what we've seen out of him the last 3 or 4 games is he's brought more to the team. Like when he first arrived for about 2 or 3 months, he came on often off the bench with 15, 20 to go and he was just using up space. He wasn't actually offering anything, wasn't holding the ball up, wasn't fighting, wasn't pressing. Recently, he has shown what he can offer. He's good on the ball, he's comfortable on the ball, he's got a bit of pace, he can take people on, he's tricky. But his finishing has let him down when he's had opportunities for us, which is strange because I think Klopp said he was the best finisher at the club when he was at Liverpool.
Yeah, so you don't play Everton until game week 35, man.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'll take an Origi blinding display and a couple of goals for that game. But yeah, at the moment he's inside, I think, and that's keeping either Alanga or Hudson-Odoi out of the team. But I wouldn't be surprised if Nuno keeps with Origi playing out wide and Alanga on one flank and Wood down the middle. I think that's probably how we'll go.
Yeah, it feels like he's probably sticking in at the moment, I would suggest. Alanga's surely got favouritism over Hudson-Odoi, hasn't he?
Yeah, because he brings that direct goal threat, whereas Hudson-Odoi, his threat is from range. He hasn't got the explosive pace that Alanga has got. He's fast travelling with the ball, and he's great to bring on in the last 15 on 20 when defenders are tired. He will cause you problems in that period, but I think you start Alanga and Origi, I think, at the moment.
Would you prefer Alanga, left or right?
I think his combination with Williams is strong, so I prefer him on the right.
Okay. Sorry, Roy, go on.
I was going to say it makes sense to play him on the left against us, though, which is what I was kind of hoping Hudson-Odoi would start, although I don't know if that's much better, but Munoz will push on, and then he'll be running at Joel Ward, getting dragged into a wide area. So the pace just up against Ward. I mean, Alanga's direct running and pace will probably expose Ward a bit.
You came on this pod before the first game against us, and you warned us similar stuff about Tottenham players from the left against you. Werner scored. Sonny scored late on. Kind of from that position from the left eventually.
The good goal in the home game, or at Selhurst Park, our home game, came down the left as well. Brendan Johnson won cutback.
Yes, interesting. I'm interested to know, guys, do you guys know where you're at with chip strategy, roughly? If you don't want to give it away, Mark, you don't have to. I might be ruining Black Box. I don't know. This don't go out till Thursday. Does that help?
No, I'm not on Black Box this week. This is the last pod I'm doing for a while. But chip strategy, I'm probably wildcard 35. Whether I bench boost 37, probably, yeah, bench boost 37 is probably what I'm doing. Wildcard 35.
So you're heading towards 34, or are you free hitting 34?
No, I haven't got a free hit, so I'm
yours is gone. Okay. Yeah. Rory, for you?
Yeah, I'm sort of got away from me the last couple of weeks with the move, but I'm sort of going a bit more controversially just to sort of maybe get a bit of ground back. So I'm actually going for wild card 33 and then free hit 34.
Oof. Nice. Go on, just fill in on the idea behind that.
Well, I think most of the doublers that I would want in 37 are the teams with doubles. Then the only team with a kind of bad fixture then, I think, is Newcastle. Spurs aside, but Spurs fixtures after...
It's not bad for Gordon and Isak, mate.
Yeah, well, theirs in 35. So the idea would be to have like maybe Lascelles on the bench and then bench one of Gordon and Isak and then go into 35, bringing the other one in. That would be a sort of full process there, but with the aim, because that's a Sheffield United game or something, isn't it? They've got then in 35 Newcastle.
Yeah,
it's 33, isn't it? I thought it was 33 Newcastle play.
33 is before the double, so Newcastle have Sheffield United at home in 35.
Yeah. So I was looking at it, and I'm just thinking most of the players that I would want for the double in 37, I can probably have in 33. And also, I just looked at how bad my original plan was: wildcard now or in 31. But then the midweek fixture kind of scuppers that a little bit. I would have had to probably do the planning over this international break. So then my team looks okay in 31 and 32. So
it's interesting that having a second glance at those that probably double in 37 and looking at 33, it's probably only Tottenham that's particularly bad, actually, in 33. I'm going to have a second look back on that, but I don't want to get diverted. But the reason that I asked that primarily was to know if you were free hitting in 34, Rory, because we're very much going to be eyes on Crystal Palace assets. As you're heading that way, Mark, have you got eyes on Palace players?
Yeah, definitely Eze for that. Yeah, I think that I'll be bringing in Eze as part of my moves going into 34. So... who I'll lose, I'm not sure yet, but Eze will be coming in. It's going to be a difficult decision because I'll be losing a good player to get Eze in, but two home fixtures against West Ham, Newcastle, when he's on pens, and he is like, I mean, he's a player that I've wanted to bring in all season, but the opportunity never really arose to do that because of the injury concerns that he had. There was a shuffle on pens, wasn't there, for a while as well. So, yeah, he's very much on my radar. Whether I'll bring in a Palace defender, I don't know. But over the last, I was looking at data ahead of Black Box, and over the last six, Crystal Palace are the fourth best defence and Forest are the fifth best defence. So defensively, both of us offer, that says it's going to be 0-0, doesn't it, Saturday?
You concede a lot from set pieces and we never score them. So yeah, probably.
Yes. Well, yeah. We're a perfect symmetry of a 0-0, aren't we? I think that's what it's looking like. But yeah, a Palace defender, I wouldn't overlook that either with the fixtures. West Ham, Newcastle, I think that there could be a clean sheet in there in one of those games. Newcastle, obviously difficult. West Ham, you never know what you get. So yeah, I definitely want a Palace player. It'll be Eze, maybe plus one.
Problem is, you're probably leaving it 2:34, though, aren't you, Mark? Because of the two fixtures beforehand. Yeah. And I suppose you want your Arsenal-Liverpool in place before you take that decision, basically.
Yeah, Eze will be my move going into 34.
Okay. Rory, if that free hit was now, in fact, no, don't do that because we need to include Michael Olise in the conversation. You get to 34, he's fit. He's fit. Do you think you go free Palace on free hit?
Yeah, probably, but that's my bias, obviously. I would say, looking at the defensive stats that Mark mentioned there, I think Munoz, I mean, if you want to have a look at the goal that he just scored for Colombia against Spain, it was a very good acrobatic goal, and he sprints the length of the pitch to catch up with the play and arrives late into the box. Great finish. So Munoz, he got the assist against Luton as well, and he's getting forward more. He looks more confident. So I definitely recommend Munoz. On our Slack, we've had a bit of a debate maybe of getting Mateta, but I mean, I've never suggested getting Mateta just because I don't have that much faith in him. And then Eze and Olise, I can't remember Elise's stats, but he's played about 11 games this season, got 6 goals or something like that. He's been incredibly productive when he's been on the pitch. It's just literally he has played so few games. Even within those 10 games, he'll have so few minutes. So, yeah, I would triple up. I can see some people might be a bit reticent to do that. Two home games, West Ham look like they might be drifting out of it domestically, so they might have nothing to play for in the league by then, although they're still in the European picture at the moment, and Newcastle's defence away from home hasn't been that good all season. So
you've mentioned Munoz, you've mentioned Eze, Olise, Mateta, and yet for those who are perhaps wildcarding now, and looking to bench boost in 34, I don't think you've mentioned a Palace player that's most likely to get picked. It's Chris Richards, isn't it?
Yeah, because of the price. Yeah, he's nailed. I think when Gehi comes back, that probably won't be until after 34, to be fair. But I think even then, he'll probably just move over to right centre-half and Gehi will be left-sided centre-half. So, yeah, Richards is nailed now with the three, if it stays.
I think it's unlikely beyond 34 that there'd probably be any use for Richards other than sell or bench anyway, with respect. He's 3.9 at the time of recording. I think by the time you listen or watch this, he may very well be 4.0. But those on wildcard might already have him sitting in there at 3.9. And that, you can see that, can't you? Richards, Lascelles, Gusto, forcing that big, powerful midfield five heading that way. Yeah, I think Richards would be popular, but I also think you're right, Rory. Basically, unless you try and force Haaland in, really, on that free hit in 34, money's not a problem, I don't think. So Muniz would be the better choice under that circumstance, wouldn't he?
Yeah, he'll give you a lot more. I mean, he'll get the defensive returns if they're there. And I think he'll probably, across those two games, I can see him definitely getting an attacking return, yeah.
If Elise came back and hits the ground running and it looks really good heading into 34, and you could only have one of Eze Elise, where does your money go?
For me, it's Elise, to be honest, because I think he is just more productive a player. I think they split set pieces. Eze will take free kicks and corners from our left side, and Elise will take them from the other side to get the curl in. But I just think he's a ridiculous footballer. I mean, he won't be here for... We're just hoping we get to see him a bit more before he goes in the summer, because he's a ridiculous player, honestly. When he does go to one of the big clubs, people will be saying he's, you know, Champions League quality. He's incredible.
Mark, reaction to that, Elise over Eze? Does that change your thinking a bit? It'll give you a bit more money as well.
Yeah, I'm looking at the data and, you know, Elise over the season is the eighth top midfielder for XGI non-penalty per 90, 0.63. And Eze is further down in 15th from 0.54. So if you're data-led, and Elise is in the top 10 for shots per 90 in the box, chance created, points per 90, he's in the top 10 for all those KPIs. So I think that really reinforces what Rory said. I think, like Eze, it's been the frustration of the intermittent injuries has meant he hasn't been a bigger factor in our seasons. Otherwise, I think he would have been maybe not a mainstay, because getting in there midfield's tough, but he certainly would have featured before now.
I think over this period as well, if you had better fixtures and we didn't have people at Palmer's price, Gordon's price, knowing that they've got them doubles later on, people would be like, when's he back? When's he back? Mm. Yeah. I very much think so. Mike, I don't think Forest interest is dead as yet, actually. I think you fall into a couple of interesting categories. The next two fixtures are good. Mm. There will be a group of people that have gambled a few of your players going into game week 29, particularly likes of perhaps Alanga or Gibbs White. And interestingly, technically, for those who free hit in 37, you finish with the bottom two, therefore, in 36 and 38. So it might be worth having a look at you again at the end. What would you, in the first instance, what would you advise to people who've gone on Elanga and Gibbs White and are heading into this week and feeling a bit nervous about it?
I think they both start. I think we struggled all season to get anything out of Gibbs White in terms of end product. But again, I look at these three games, these three home games, and think, if you're holding him, if you've held him this far, and there are other, you know, other places you can make transfers, I don't think it's a bad move to hold either Elanga or Gibbs White. It's got to be their most productive run of four games of the season. Otherwise, we go down. So I think if I was Gibbs White and Elanga and I look at my role in the team, which is to create and to score goals, which between them they can do, then I hope they're sitting down and looking at the fixtures and going, I've got to show what I can do over the next four games. And if I do, you know, if Gibbs White can be the best midfielder on the pitch against Eze, then we win that game. If Gibbs White can be the best midfielder against Pereira, against Fulham, we win that game. If he can be the best midfielder on the pitch against Nunez or Neto, whoever's going to be fit for that game. Sarabia is probably the only one they've got fit, right? So Gibbs White needs to be the match winner for us in those three home games. And he's capable, but he just hasn't had that end product this season enough times. And this is the time for him to prove himself. So, and Gibbs White is a player I like and other clubs like. Of course, he's going to be much sought after in the summer when the rumour mill gets going. He's not of a class that, don't think he's in Eze's or Elise's class, but he certainly in a home game can lift us, and he could be someone worth holding on to.
If someone said, I want to buy a Forest player now for just the next two, hypothetical wild card 32, or perhaps even bench 32 to do Rory's wild card 33, would you advise to go there, or would you advise to look at someone else from a different club?
Oh, yeah, I wouldn't go a Forest player.
Fine.
No. But I think these next four games, there'll be output from Alango and Gibbs White without a doubt, because if not, we're going down.
What about defensively? While the whole community fights to buy whichever one of Palmer, Son or Salah they don't have, everyone seems to have forgotten they've got an obliterated defence this week. Some might sensibly look at it, Mark. Could Forest be considered over these next couple?
Yeah, I mean, the defensive data under Nuno is really surprising. As I said, we're like the fourth best defence or the fifth best defence behind Palace over the last six. The data's been really good under Nuno, but the end, you know, the goals have still been going in because of the set piece frailty. I think there's these three home games, there could be one or two clean sheets there because we have to win these games. I don't think there'd be many goals in any of these games. Wolves have got injuries. Fulham away from home aren't in great shape. So I think these are all maybe 2-1, 1-0 games, right? I think there could be one clean sheet out of the three, maybe even two. You never know. Under Cooper, I'd have said there's probably two clean sheets because we were less expansive. Under Nuno, we will probably go more front foot and we'll concede. But in terms of big chances conceded over the last six, only Arsenal were better. So, you know, defensively, we don't give much away. You've got to score a high XG chance to score against us, or you've got to score set piece. If we can just be stronger at set plays, we won't concede goals in these three home games.
Just on that, on the defensive, just glancing at 32 when you go to Tottenham, if Son does well over the next couple, be people thinking maybe Son against Forest in 32, considering United, Liverpool play each other, all on the way to Palace with perhaps a small rotation risk. It'll be his third game of four over, I think it's a 9-day period. Palace is the one that could be the rest. Villa at home to Brentford. A lot of people probably would have just sold Watkins. Chelsea are at Sheffield United. Your instinct, if someone says you want to captain Son against Forest, would be?
Would he be playing down the middle?
That would probably be my first question as well, and I don't know the answer till this weekend's gone. Let's say yes, Mark. It's probably going to be a no.
If he's playing down the middle, then yes. If he's playing out wide, he's playing out against probably our most informed player in
Mika Williams.
Yeah, so I would say no if he's playing out wide.
Is he, if someone does want to punt a Forest defender for the next two or say three of the next four, is that the one then, Williams?
Yeah, for me. Toffolo's more cultured. He's got a better end product, but I think Williams's energy. He just scored that set piece against Wales as well. So we've got to give him a go at set pieces because Gibbs White's been woeful in terms of producing anything. So I think that, and Williams has just been our man of the match the last three or four games. He's been so consistent. The energy he's got, he gets forward. He has got a good end product. He has got a shot on him. I think he's probably the one I would go for because Aina could threaten Toffolo's start.
Okay. Murillo. Safest of all, if people are that worried. Williams is safe at the minute, though, isn't he?
I think Williams plays week in, week out now. I think Aina comes back in on the left for me.
Okay.
Because I don't think Nuno rates Toffolo that highly, as we saw when he was playing Tavares, right? He's injured at the moment. So I think if Aina's fit, he'll come in for Toffolo. And I don't mind that. Williams can't be dropped at the moment. He's our best performer. Murillo, so at some point in these final games, Murillo will score a goal and it'll be a spectacular one.
32, no doubt.
Because he's just trying. You saw his free kick against Luton, right? He's trying to do the spectacular to get noticed so he gets that move in the summer, which he'll probably get anyway. But if he scores like a wonder goal, I mean, he nearly scored one at Palace, didn't he? I mean, Roy, I don't know if he scored that game. So he's just someone who fancies his chances of making a name for himself. And yes, he's worth backing. He's going to play week in, week out. But I prefer Williams in terms of what he gets forward and creates.
Non-fantasy question. Who is his best partner?
Murillo?
Yeah.
Murillo's best partner? Yeah, it's kind of tough, isn't it? I would say it's Nia Kate, in my opinion. I mean, a fit Felipe would be my choice, but I don't think there is a fit Felipe anymore. I think that he's best, matches for us are behind us. I think he has struggled on occasions. Bolly, because of his dominance in the air against certain teams. So I don't
that's
think
felt that like a, that's why he played Luton, right?
Yeah, there isn't a cut and dry. I mean,
and Omar Bamadeli's played quite a lot.
Yeah, I think
recently
against teams that don't have that aerial threat, Omar Bamadeli is the better option. But against Marteta and against Muniz, then he'll probably play Bolly.
Okay.
Again, when we play Wolves, he'll probably play Omar Bamadeli.
What's on the goalkeeper, Mark?
Yeah, I like him. Yeah, Sells. I think he's been a lot better. I think that
it couldn't be worse, could it? That would have been some hell of a.
I mean, we look back on why we're in this position. The goalkeeper recruitment has got to be one of the major, major factors behind it. We let points slip literally through our hands when we signed Turner. What I don't quite understand is his distribution is so bad. You know, he's so bad at his feet. How much scouting needed to be done to identify that? And if you identify that, you don't buy a keeper to play in the Premier League who can't play with his feet, do you? You just don't. So I really don't understand how we ended up with Matt Turner. I don't want to criticise him, but his confidence just took a knock and it just spiralled, really. But like I say, his distribution, his ability of his feet, a Premier League goalkeeper can't be like that now. We know that, right? You know, Joe Hart lost his place for Man City years ago because he was a fantastic shot stopper but couldn't play with his feet. And, you know, it's the case with Turner. He was a liability and unfortunately, you know, he was a bit of a scapegoat of our support. And I feel sorry for him because he's a nice guy. But Sells has come in and he's a lot more secure. And ironically, his distribution is really good.
Okay, good. Good. I haven't seen a huge amount so far. He made one astonishing save against Liverpool in the game shortly before the controversial goal near the end.
Playing for Belgium at the time of recording, I think. He's starting for Belgium now.
Oh, let's hope he doesn't get injured because that would be catastrophic, Mark. Sorry. Is he in goal for Belgium tonight? We are pre-recording just before England-Belgium kickoff. Rory, your goalkeeper is injured and didn't. Your backup goalkeeper didn't get added to the England squad. James Trafford did instead. How big of a blow is Sam Johnson's injury?
Yeah, I feel sorry for him. I mean, the board might feel vindicated that they spent 20 million quid on a backup goalkeeper, to be honest, given that he has seen quite a lot of minutes so far this season. But yeah, it's disappointing. I feel sorry for Sam because it looks like he probably won't make the England squad now if he did have a chance of getting in. But yeah, Henderson being there, we had this discussion before. I think I mentioned he's got sort of main character energy. He sort of wants to be the centre of attention, which is not really what you want from your goalkeeper. You don't want him to be getting involved in the game. It's like the sort of Ramsdale thing where he got distracted by birds. It's like you just want him to not really be noticed in a match until he has to make the big saves. But then if he could do that, maybe he'd still be at United. So yeah, Henderson's become a bit of a divisive figure at Palace. Mostly because of the board deciding to spend 20 million on him and not buy an attacking player, which has obviously affected our season negatively. So he's become a bit of a scapegoat, mostly for the way that the board approached the transfer market. He hasn't really put a foot wrong. I don't think he's made too many glaring errors. There are just a few sort of heart in the mouth moments when he sort of just flaps at things and drops the ball inside his own 6-yard box. But yeah, he's a good Premier League goalkeeper.
You liked him, didn't you, Mark?
Oh, yeah. He was a character and he had an aura about him and a confidence that spread amongst the defence and the fans got behind him and he was, you know, he had a good bond with our support. So we loved him and the injury was, you know, a real setback for him and it meant that we didn't pursue interest after that. And obviously he picked up the injury at Old Trafford when playing for you, Rory. So, but he's recovered now and I only want wish well of Dean Henderson, obviously not Saturday, but in the future for sure.
Goalkeeper consideration for the double, Rory?
Possibly. I mean, probably have a few saves to make in there. I would say no because if you'll get the same defensive returns from Muniz. So I just recommend buying the right wing back. For that, but yeah, I'm not sure if he'll make enough saves to make up the points, and I can't really see us keeping clean sheets, even though Mark's just pointed out the good defensive stats there. I just don't necessarily feel too confident. West Ham and Newcastle, two teams, certainly Newcastle, I mean, we lost 4-0 earlier this season, but West Ham game certainly could go either way. I think we've got had quite a few recent fixtures against them where it's been sort of 2-2 and 3-2 and quite high scoring draws often. So
yeah, I just wonder, yeah, for those heading to 34 and looking to bench boost and looking for keepers, I guess ideal scenario here is Alisson's not fit till 34, and then that becomes an obvious one for those on wild card now but need some clarity. But if it becomes all Alisson's potentially back for Manchester United in game week 32, people quickly will start looking, oh God, I want a bench boost that week. Okay, Raya and then it probably falls down a line of between sort of Henderson, Neto and Pickford. And how many weeks would you bench Raya? No, Henderson might do the job for you. He's 4.4 currently.
Yeah, I mean, it is two home games. I'm just trying to have a look, see Bournemouth have got one difficult game and one slightly better game than Pickford.
If you went Neto with Raya, though, for example, if you went down that route on wildcard, I don't think, even with Bournemouth's fixtures, I don't think you pick Neto over Raya in any week other than this one.
Yeah, so it's possibly the same with Henderson. Maybe because it's for the bench boost, I guess you're probably wildcarding him in maybe now. So you've got these 2 weeks, which might be quite good as well. And I just don't necessarily feel too confident with us keeping clean sheets, because, I mean, we're where we are on the table for a reason. But I wouldn't do it. But I'd feel more comfortable if it was Sam Johnson, to be fair.
If you wildcarded now, do you think you'd go Richards because of the price?
Yeah. I think I'd probably just go for two. I would go for Munoz and Eze and then just wait for Elise to come back. But maybe that's too much faith in our attack and our defences. I mean, given the stats that Mark's just said there, maybe you could go for Richards just to kind of make weight, like money saver.
Yeah, I guess intriguingly as well, Mark, like I said, that bit at the end, there must be a small group of people who would maybe wildcard 35 and free hit 37. That would seem a little bit off to me, but I'm sure someone will land there. And then, yeah, as we said, the Forest game, Sheffield United away 36, Burnley away 38. You then don't need for 37, bench 35, Man City at home. Yeah, I guess it's whoever hits the form going into the run there at that point, isn't it, I suppose?
Yeah, it depends what there is to play for. I mean, those Sheffield United and Burnley games could be, I mean, they're likely to be critical to our fate, right? So,
the flippers, you might be safe, mate.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't think we're ever going to see a relegation battle like this again because of the points, penalties, the concerns.
There's more coming next year, mate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
yeah, there are, aren't they? I know they're always difficult.
I was reading a report this morning that suggested you probably need to raise circa sort of 20 to 25 million before the end of June to avoid getting done next season. Which, by the way, that's not as bad as it sounds. People are like, oh, yes, sell Gibbs White. You got a lot of people out in the fringes who you got four or five players you could sell there for 4 or 5 million will do the job if you can get it done.
Yeah. I mean, I think we've got assets that we can sell. I mean, like, I think Murillo will probably go this year or next.
Mangala will get done for about 10 as well, so that eats into that total as well.
Yeah, and there's, you know, I think that there's players on the books, like you say, that can bring in that money. Yeah, we'll have to see. I don't worry too much. I mean, like, if we stay up, I think we'll be fine. I think we'll navigate through that okay. Having said that, we walked into this points penalty, and I always thought that, you know, given the volume of players that were coming in, surely we're on top of the financial fair play picture, because you think it was bloody obvious, wouldn't you? And we walked into it. So
I understand why Forest fans were defending themselves, because we all obviously see on the outside now why we're all going, well, this doesn't feel right. And
yeah,
obviously it's proved to be correct. Easy, where do you think you finish, Mark?
I think we'll come 17th. I think we'll just survive.
Rory, do you think they stay up?
Yeah, I think they will. I mean, Luton's home games are quite good. I think it does depend on the appeal. I was looking at it and thinking one of the things with the appeal, the reason they got the 2 points back was they complied and they cooperated with the Premier League quite a lot. The commission sort of stressed how important it was to get that done very quickly. So I almost think maybe the appeal sort of puts a spanner in the works there, where they're sort of delaying it and like sort of detracting from that point that the commission made that they gave them a point back for. So perhaps, but yeah, I think they've got enough. I think they've got more quality than Luton, certainly. It does depend on what happens with Everton as well, though.
I think if you walk out of my place in 32, Mark, and you haven't won between now and then, I'd become nervous for you. Otherwise, I think you'd be all right.
If we haven't won by the time we leave your stadium in 32, as in we've drawn against Palace and Fulham or lost, we're down. Yeah.
I don't think you can say that, mate, because Luton's still got to do results. You can say Luton's home games have been really, really attractive, what's left. We lost at home to Sheffield United, lost at home to Burnley, drew at home to yourselves. It's no guarantee that they're going to win them games, mate.
Yeah, I know. It depends how quickly their injury problems return. I think what they've got now, if they had the 11 they've got now to the end of the season, they're only going to pick up a couple of points, but they won't have because injuries will clear and they'll get some of their quality back. And they will fight. I mean, that's what they've got. There's no question that the fight in them is strong, and that little ground is an intimidating place to go when the fans get behind them. So I think if their injury is clear, they can beat Brentford at home, they can beat Everton at home, they can beat Fulham at home. With the 11 they've got now, I would say you're right. Yeah, they'll struggle to get points even in those games. But, you know, they've got to hope they'll get players back, and we've got to think that they will. So we're squad-wise strong going into these four games. So if we don't come out of these with these four games as 7 points, I think we probably don't deserve to stay up.
Good luck. Rory, will you finish above Forest?
Yeah. I mean, I am nervous for the reasons that Mark pointed out there. Like, Luton can put points together at home, and Forest obviously very motivated. I hope that the players believe that we are still in a relegation battle, to be honest, and you want to finish as high as possible. But I think we've got the games there. I think the home games in the double, I think the Wolves game and the Fulham game, where they might not have anything to play for, I think we should pick up enough points in those to keep us above Forest, Everton and Luton.
Yeah, you'll be fine, mate. I'm fairly certain of that. And I can see myself, because I probably won't free hit 34, Rory. I think at least two for me on that.
Yep.
If not,
which three. Two?
For me, if I had to lock it now, I mean, you couldn't go Elisa at this minute, right? You need to see the progress. Yeah. So Eze and Munoz. And then, yeah, the third. If there's a third, I think it would be Elisa. Otherwise, I would probably look elsewhere, I think, for me personally. But I think if I was wildcard and heading that way now, Richards would go in. I just won't need to go that cheap at that point. He might end up on the bench, maybe, for me in that game week. Cheers, gents. Thank you both very much. Mark, correct score prediction for Saturday?
I've got to back a win, haven't I? And I don't see there being many goals given the what I've seen from the defences and the attacks. I think we win 1-0. Going to be very, very nervy. We never do things the easy way, so we're not going to coast to a victory if we get a win. Palace are a tough team to break down. 1-0 for me.
Rory?
The first time I predict a win on Clash of the Correspondents, I'm going for a 2-1 because I just think the way Gleeson has got us playing will help us unlock the defence a bit. And they do have a tendency. I mean, if we go 1-0 up, they'll have to chase the game is the thing, because they'll be looking at that as a must win. So if we do get a goal, I think there'll be a few gaps there to exploit.
I don't think you get beat, Mark. I think as well, you mentioned about atmosphere at Luton. There'll be one at your place Saturday that your people are going to feel wronged, I think. Mm-hmm. And they'll know the importance of this situation over the next two. And I think that gives you a little bit of edge of advantage. I'm not sure if I'm confident enough to back you to win, but I don't think you'll lose. I'll go 1-1. I'll bottle it. That's good. Thanks very much, guys. Mark, anything you want to plug before we finish? You've got this show, haven't you?
Yeah, I've got Black Box. I'm going underground for a couple of weeks, be back in 2 or 3 weeks, but as is man in the fault with Luke and Andy this week. So that's a triforce to be reckoned with, isn't it? So
good stuff.
Yeah, that'll be cool.
Is that Wednesday night this week, is it?
I think they're doing tomorrow night, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. So as you've listened to this, that was last night. Rory, anything you want to plug?
No, I haven't really got anything to plug. Just join the Planet FPL Patreon.
Well sold, young man. Thank you very much. Next clash of correspondence will be Fulham versus Newcastle next Thursday with Dara Curran and Simon Bibby. And Rory's fellow six doublers will all be on COTC between now and game week 34 as well. Tom Meadow, Brentford will be on in 33, and the other four will all be on ahead of game week 34. Adam Pritchard is on in game week 33 covering Arsenal as well. No content tomorrow. It's Good Friday. I'm going to take the day off. Partially. Deadline stream 10 a.m. UK time on the Planet FPL YouTube channel. And because it's Bank Holiday Monday, expect a very late Sunday night game review podcast with me and Suj on Sunday evening. Just leaves me to say thanks very much to Mark and to Rory. Good luck, gents. Cue music, please. Manchild.
Fantasy Football Show.
Sports Social Podcast Network.